This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to April 4th edition of InvestTalk. I do appreciate you being with me. Above average investing for the average investor. Ned Davis, who is an investment strategist, was quoted as saying, "The aim is to make money, not to be right." And of course, there's a big difference between the two. For example, many hold on to a strongly held view no matter what. And it will guide your decisions, their decisions, making process. It guides you because you believe this, even though it may be wrong. Like, global oil production will soon peak. It's not peaking. But this was said years and years ago. It didn't peak. Or the IT revolution means this time it's different. That's the old dot-com era. Well, everybody was saying, oh, the stock market is rallying because it's different this time, because you don't need money. You don't need earnings, corporations. You need eyeballs on the dot-com, eyeballs on the dot-com websites. You don't need to make money. Eventually, it'll turn into money. No, you need to make money. But everybody believed it. Drove stock prices up. Making good decisions requires an open mind and a willingness to be proven wrong. Not right, to be proven wrong and accepting the facts, if that's what they say. It's hard for young people to get this, by the way. I've had a lot to go around with young people about, they just know this is true and know something is true. True, 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 true. And I say, be skeptical. Be skeptical. You don't know. You think you know. You don't know. And it's hard for people who are, especially smart people. I've noticed that about smart people. Smart people never think they're wrong. And they're wrong often. Everybody's wrong often. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay. Just react to it. Don't disbelieve it. Have an open mind. So make sure you have that. We're live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. I'm live right now. Our listener line, 24-hour listener line is on, because it's always on. 888-99-CHART. And we'll go to that in a minute. What's at stake when you rebalance? That's going to be one of our talking points. What's at stake when you rebalance your portfolio? One of our main talking points. If you're a hands-on investor, you're constantly looking for the next big winner, right? Investors scour the investment landscape for opportunities and jump at the attractive ones. We all do that. And for professionals like myself, we analyze the risks involved, understand the volatility, the risk profile of the asset, and determine its appropriateness for the entity of taking in the investment. So it's not just looking at that particular stock. You take an extensive, we look at risk versus reward scenarios and calculate where this stock might fit in a particular portfolio and should it go in there. If the calculations don't mesh, then we don't buy it, no matter how good it looks, no matter what the potential is. Because our portfolio is constructed with a risk-reward perspective. Do you want to get an example of that? Okay, let's see. Let's say we believe that oil stocks are really going to do well. But we already have a couple. But we found another one that's really, really strong. But we already have a couple in a portfolio. We look at the oil profile, how much oil exposure we have, and look at a couple other positions, and they don't have a direct exposure to oil, but an indirect exposure to oil. Maybe we have too much oil even right now, so I would not buy this new one, even though it looked great. Wouldn't. Stuff like that, that's what we're talking about. So the average investor rarely looks at it this way, rarely. Typically, the average investor looks at a stock, oh, it's a good stock, I like it, it's going up, I'm going to buy it. And it leads to the next one, and then the next one, and the next one. They don't look at, well, how does this fit in my whole portfolio, and how much risk am I building into my portfolio? And this is why we have our clients take our risk questionnaire, by the way. That's on our website for free. Because we want to try to pinpoint how much tolerance you have for volatility and who you have for risk. And I think it's good for you to know, too. So it gives you a good, everybody, a good, us, you, everybody, a good starting point for the discussion about your goals and the risks you want to take to achieve them. And it's different for everybody. Once we know that, then I can have a better idea what kind of program you should fit into of the programs that we have. And, you know, it gets more and more in depth. It's not, it's just the scratch of the surface. You keep building that knowledge of yours and ours, of you and of the risk that you feel comfortable with. So you can take that risk test now. It's only 3 or 4 or 5 questions. It's pretty simple. It's a quiz. It's just, you know, it's very simple. It's free. It's available at investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab and then the free risk analysis. You'll see it, free in this analysis. Now let's get to our InvestTalk listener line, 888-99-CHART. It's how to reach us right now. And we're going to talk to who, I don't know. Let's see what we got.
Hey, Steve or Justin. My name's Kevin. I'm an avid podcast listener. I have a question. I'm 27 years old. I'm single, very comfortable with taking risk. And I have about $20,000 set aside right now for my first home. Don't plan on buying a home for about 2 to 3 years or so. And it really drives me nuts having to just sit in cash. So I was curious what your thoughts were on taking some or all that money, putting it in something like a TIPS fund or maybe a short-term CD, just something to get a little bit more than it's sitting in cash and not even matching inflation. So let me know your thoughts. Enjoy the podcast. Thanks for everything you do.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with you putting in a year or 2 year CD, depending on your when you think you're going to look for a home. TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Bonds, I don't have a problem with that either, because those are fairly very liquid. Yeah, well, let me rephrase that. A CD is not liquid until it comes due. If you cash it earlier, you're going to be penalized. But you say you have 2 to 3 years, so you can buy a 1 to 2 year CD and not have to worry about it. And TIPS are much more liquid if you use the ETF. But I don't have a problem with that, rather than just leave it in cash and money market where you're not going to make inflation. I do have a problem if you are going to put it in the stock market, because you just never know when the stock market's going to go down sharply on you. And it would be just your luck it goes down sharply a few months before you need the money and didn't recover yet. So it takes a little time to recover. Remember the 2008 crash went down 45%+. Took a year to get it all back. So you don't want to go through that kind of period when you're trying to buy a house. Okay? 888-99-CHART. What's at stake when you rebalance? That's one of our main talking points. I also want to talk about, did you know 50% of Americans have little emergency funds? I've mentioned this before, but I got some more stats I want to share with you. Tesla surpasses Ford. It's all on the news today in market capitalization. What does that mean? You know, we know the numbers, but does it really mean anything to anybody? And I want to talk about that and Tesla. And where does debt go when you die? What happens to the debt? What happens to your debt when you die? I guess that's kind of a morbid topic, isn't it? Anyways, those are going to be my talking points today. So whatever you want to talk about comes first, of course. So you can give us a call, 888-99-CHART. The market actually ended up today. Started down, but ended up. And that was kind of a surprise to me, but that's okay. The Dow was up 39 points, the NASDAQ up 4 points, and the S&P up 1 point. And most of that came right near the end of the day, the up part, because it was down most of the day and just ended right at the high, which is actually a kind of a positive thing when it ends up at the high of the day. But it would be better if it ended up high of the day on lots of volume, but there wasn't. So I don't think it really means anything right now. And remember, the market's down from March 1st till today. The market's down. If you go back, it's up from a couple weeks ago, but it's still all, you know, on. So far we have lower lows and lower highs. You know, 2 lows and 2 highs. And now it looks like it turned down a little bit. For another stroke downwards. But if it turns around in the middle without making a new low, then we may have at least a trend that's been broken. It's not going lower, maybe. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What's Your Money question today. Maybe you want to know about where the average person can find good data to help them evaluating stocks. We talked about that. We'll talk about this at we talked about it at the conference, where to find that stuff. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hi, my name's Andrea, and I'm calling from Los Angeles. I was just calling because I wanted to get your thoughts on Target right now. It's falling super low, and I was wondering if this is a good time to get in or if I should hold out for a bit and see what happens. Love to know your thoughts on it. Thank you, and have a great day.
Well, I certainly can say it's at a very good value point on a chart, and it's at a bottom, and it's trying to test the double bottom right now. It's at $53.43 today. I think this is a good place, but you need to wait to see if it holds this bottom. It may try to make a new bottom somewhere else. This is Target, everybody. And everybody knows Target, 1,800 Target stores, you know, in the United States. And what happened is they missed their numbers. They missed their numbers by about 5%. They're still going to make a lot of money. They're going to make $3.99 this year per share, then $4.07 next year. But last year they made $5 a share, so it went down a dollar. And, of course, boom, stock feels it. I think at this point, though, I think most of the bad news is built into the stock. So I think this is going to be a good place to pick it up. But we want to wait a little bit longer. You want to see it form that bottom. And that bottom is right around where it is now, not too far from it, right around the low of today, which was close to $53, you know, right there. And if it bounces from here and goes up, I think I'd be a buyer. We own Target in one of our managed accounts, by the way. And it pays a nice dividend, 4.5%. And it's, I don't know how many umpteen years, it's never cut its dividend, and it's always raised its dividend. So if you're looking for a dividend payer and you're not worried about the short term, Target would be one of those core holdings you could buy, because I kind of like it myself. Let's go to Ruby in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Ruby?
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I'm good.
Thank you for the call.
This is regarding the stock Total, TOT. Like to know the is it the right price to enter?
It went up nicely today. It was up a little over 1%, up 59 cents to $51.80. This is Total, everybody. And gas and exploration, production, refining, marketing, and transportation of crude oil and petrochemical products globally. It's a big, big company, $127 billion, and it's out of France. So it's Total out of France. And the most recent quarter was finally after 2 years, 8 quarters in a row of sales falling. The most recent quarter sales grew. And they're going to make $4.33 this year. That's 28% more than last year. And they are scheduled to make another $5.31 next year per share, another 23% increase. So, and that's why the stock is acting much better. It's acting much better. Now, the question is you have to ask is, if at $51 a share, if it makes $5.31, that means it's a 10 PE. And a 10 PE puts it right in the middle of its range. So, you might want to, I'd probably wait for a breakout above $51.25. If it breaks above that, I think I'd be a buyer. Or a pullback in maybe the $47 to $48 range, and then buy it then. But I kind of like it, Ruby. Appreciate the call, especially when Europe looks like it's turning around. This is Invest Talk. I'm Steve Peasley, 888-99-CHART, our live listener line number, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Now, you've heard me talk about rebalancing quite often, and there's very specific reasons why I do it. If you think about it for a little bit, you'll find out that it kind of makes you sell high and buy low. If you think about it, What does rebalancing mean? It means your portfolio is out of balance. Somewhere inside there, either stock or mutual funds or ETF went up really quite a bit or down quite a bit, throwing off the balance of the portfolio. You wanted a certain amount of core stocks. You wanted a certain amount of growth stocks. Whatever your strategy is, the balance part is what that strategy developed for you, implementing that balance. So when the balance gets off course, then that means you have to either sell back some of your winners or buy more of your, buy back your, not necessarily losers, but others that are in that same sector that's not working, or that same type of stock that's not working. All this means is that you're going to have to look at your portfolio and make adjustments. So if it got out of whack because something went up, you're going to cut back, therefore sell any winners. Vice versa on the loser side. So it really helps you reduce or mitigate risk, okay, and maximize whatever strategy you're implementing, okay? And that makes perfect sense, right? That's what rebalancing does. I get asked, well, what good is it? Well, you know, there's too many investors out there trying to hit the home run, and they're forgetting that you need some base runners, because baseball just started, everybody. So you need singles and doubles and triples, and every once in a while you get that home run and you make a killing. But most of the time it's those singles and doubles. Sometimes you even walk. It's so boring, you know. But that's the way you build a safe, consistent portfolio. It takes time. You got to be patient. You know, you got to wait to buy at the right price instead of buying today. I got money in my pocket and I need to buy right now. No, you don't. I got to buy it before the next, report comes out. No, you don't. Yeah, just take your time, relax, find those winners, and understand what the values are, and you want to buy things that are not overpriced. I keep saying this, it's not something that takes a genius to do. It takes a lot of hard work. I'll grant you that. But you don't have to. You know, you don't have to be super smart. You just have to understand how things work. And the stock market, it is, I don't want to say complex, but it is convoluted. There's a lot of things you have to kind of know about the economy, about how stocks move, about what can move a stock. You know, we talked about Target and just a little while ago, and why did it fall so hard? Well, there's a couple of short sellers out there, at least one that I know of, who's really harping on Target. And did the same thing on another position of ours. So you have to understand how the game is played. A short seller wants the stock to go down. So how many short sellers are out there on your stock? What are they doing? So it's convoluted, and it's not hard necessarily as far as right doing rocket science math. But it does take a lot of work. And rebalancing can make it a little bit easier for you. Okay? Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Josh from Seattle. I had a question, a general question about MLPs and whether they should be held in a retirement account or regular brokerage account. The one specifically I'm looking at is BEP, Brookfield Energy Partners. Hold on to it for the long term, build up to about a $5,000 position. I've done a web search and seen some conflicting information on that, so just wondering what you guys think of MLPs and what type of accounts is best for them. All right, thanks a lot. Bye.
Well, there's nothing wrong with MLPs, but you got to be real careful about the tax consequences and the tax treatment. And Master Limited Partners, MLP, usually means that you get a 1099, and that's income. And if you held it in a tax-deferred account, like an IRA or SEP IRA, versus a regular account, you have to be aware of the tax treatment. I am not an accountant, but I know that some of them are still, no matter if you have them in an IRA account, you still can be taxed on them. I'm not the expert on that tax. I stay away from them in my IRAs because of that reason. If it's a really compelling buy, then I'll still do it in an IRA, but I try not to buy them in my IRA accounts because of the unusual tax treatment. If I do, I really need to understand, I make sure I understand what tax treatment we're talking about. And Brookfield Partners is BEP is a symbol, BEP, Boy, Edward, Paul. operates electricity in the United States, Europe, throughout the use of renewable through the use of renewable resources. It's growing very fast. It's almost $5 billion company, pays a 6.4% dividend. And that's why you're probably interested, because that nice dividend and the growth. But be very careful about the tax treatment. Find out about that before you buy it. So we're at the halfway mark of this Tuesday Invest Talk, everybody. Right now, let's hear for your money questions. You always come first, not what I want to talk about, but what you want to talk about. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
Invest Talk continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial. You've heard us talk about our active 401k program, and maybe you'd like to know more about it. It's called Active 401k because it allows you to take a proactive approach to your 401k. It ranks your current options with your current employer's plan. So all you do is log in and make the changes recommended. This program is offered by invitation to KPP clients and a limited number of our InvestTalk listeners. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab, and then look for Active 401k. Now let's continue with the podcast. InvestTalk continues on. Next time, foreign stock funds are up on their domestic counterparts in 7 of the last 8 weeks. Should you follow the trend toward international stocks? Well, that's one of our topics next time on InvestTalk. You set the topic right now. Call us at 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Hi, Art. How you doing? This is Art Menlo Park.
Good. How are you, Steve?
I'm pretty good. Can't complain. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to find out what a good entry point is for Teva, because I've already gotten in at about in the 30s, but it's been dropping the last probably month or month and a half.
Yes, it has. I think this is where it should hold. The low of today, which was closed right at the low of $32, it should hold here, because this is like, been here back in February, a couple, three times, and bounced off of here, and then is now testing it again over the last few days, the trading days. I think this is where it should hold, and if it does, this is where you want to be a buyer, Art. I wait a few days, let it maybe break above the 10 or 20-day moving average so you can get some momentum behind it before you buy more. You always want to buy stocks on an up move, over a few days or a week or two, because you don't want to try to catch what Jerry used to call a falling knife. You don't want to catch a falling knife. You want to let it fall, rattle around at the bottom. And it looks like it's rattling around at the bottom to me, but you never know for sure.
Okay. Or would you just wait until summer where we normally have like some pullback, right?
Could, especially if you said you're already in it. This is Teva Pharmaceuticals, everybody. We've talked about it several times. Israel, developer of generic specialty and over-the-counter drugs. It's a $32 billion company. And sales, 3 quarters ago, grew 1%. 2 quarters ago, it grew 15%. In the most recent quarter they reported, which was December, by the way, so we don't have the first quarter this year yet, it was up 33%. So sales are growing. It has some bad news on it, but we own Teva in one of our managed accounts, so I kind of like it. Pays a 3.6% dividend. Kind of like it here, Art. Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Bobby in Atlanta. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Steve. Good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
EPC, Edgewell Products. I think that's how the company name. E is an Echo, P is a Paul, C is a Charlie.
Edgewell Personal Care?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
You want to be a buyer of it?
Yeah, I'm looking to buy some.
Okay. It had a bad day today. It broke. We were just talking about Teva and how it's holding, it's trusting support, and it seems to be bounced off. Before today, EPC, Edgewell Personal Properties, is doing the same thing, but today it broke down, down $1.81 to $71.31. So it broke below the low today. So now, Bobby, you have to wait for it to establish another bottom. and it's because it's still falling right now. It looked like it was really going to hold the previous bottom, which was $73. Looked like it was going to hold that for several days. See, that's how you can be fooled on some of these things. But let's look at the fundamentals of the company. What does it do? It's out of St. Louis. It manufactures personal care products, including shaving systems and feminine care products and sunscreen products. It's a $4 billion company. Earnings are going to grow up 6% this year and go up another 9% next year. And it's going to be $4.11 on a $71 stock. So it's probably, what, around 18, 19 P.E.? Okay, and that the S&P 500 is about, now it's about maybe 18, 20 P. So it's right there. The problem is the sales are still kind of weak for the company. Most recent quarter, which was December, was down 2%. Quarter before that was up 9%. But, you know, it's still kind of weak. And, you know, to be honest, Bobby, it's not a compelling value. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's a bit too expensive. For me, and doesn't have a dividend, for me, I probably would look elsewhere. And you have to wait for it to bottom before you decide to buy, at the very least.
Okay.
Okay? Thanks, all Bobby. Right. Appreciate it. EPC is the symbol, everybody. Edgewell Personal Care. 888-99-CHART. 50% of Americans have little emergency funds. Now, we knew that. I've mentioned that before. Very few people have very much money. I got more stats, though. 1 in 5 have nothing. 20% have nothing saved. 1 in 5 people. 1 in 3, 33%, have less than $500 saved. This is a survey, by the way. This survey of a couple thousand people across the country. 49% of all employees are concerned, anxious, or fearful about their current financial well-being. That's a 50%. 50% have very little emergency funds. 50% are worried or concerned or anxious about their financial well-being. Well, they should be. I hate to tell you that. If you don't have enough for an emergency put aside, and I'm not talking about you just graduated from college and just started working. I'm talking about an average person. You know, been working a while. You're 30 to 40 years old and maybe 45, you don't have enough money for emergency, a few thousand dollars set aside for me. Who would not do that? If, you know, the only person that would not do that is a poor person that is living paycheck to paycheck, paycheck. And I'm not talking about a low paid person because they should be putting money aside. I'm talking about a poor person. But everybody else should have some money set aside. And did you know that the debt that people put on is almost as high as it was in 2008? That was $12.5 trillion or so. Do you know that debt is right back where it was? Did you know that? That's not very good, not very smart either. Oh, well, just pointing it out. Just bringing the stats to you. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Steve. I was wondering if you could look at the symbol CRZO and would it be a buy or not?
Okay, this is Carrizo Oil and Gas, Carrizo Oil and Gas, Inc. out of Houston. They are a $1.9 billion company, so almost a $2 billion company, engaged in exploration, production, and transportation of oil and natural gas in the United States. Let's see, you know what's really nice about them, Mike, is even though they're not that big, they've always made money. That's nice. They're going to make $1.38 per share this year. That's 21% higher than last year. And they're going to make another $2.45 next year, another 78% increase. That's a very good increase. And sales, after going down 6 quarters in a row, turned around 2 quarters ago, up 5% a quarter ago and 45% most recent quarter. Excuse me, I'm sorry. So that's really good news. They still have a lot of debt. That's a little concerning. They have a pretty high debt load. And that might be why they've, you know, been in a lot of pain. But if you looked at a chart, it looks like, Mike, it's put in the bottom about the first to middle part of March, and then tested that bottom in April. And so it's now been moving up. That bottom was right around a little about 26 and a half, and it's now 29. So if you're going to be a buyer, this looks like a good place to buy the stock right now. Right now.
Okay.
Okay?
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And, of course, you know, being in oil and gas, it's all about oil and gas prices. So, you know, it's one thing you watch when you buy this kind of company. I would look at the debt. Makes, you know, that would what concerns me. But, you know, on a chart, this looks like it put on the bottom. April is Financial Literacy Month. I hope that's not April Fool's Day. April is Financial Literacy Month, and InvestTalk is here to help. Do you have a question about any money matter? Use the phone, 888-99-CHART, or go to InvestTalk.com and click on Contact Steve. 888-99-CHART. Oh, I really messed up, didn't I?
How much time does it take to properly manage a retirement portfolio? Do you need a living trust? How much life insurance do you need? Should beginners start out with individual stocks or go to mutual funds? How much of a portfolio should be in dividend-paying stocks? All important questions, and if you're looking for answers, you're welcome to ask the financial questions that are important to you right now. 888-99-CHART is our direct line.
Hello, my name is John. I'm from Mission Viejo. I listen to your program on the podcast, and I enjoy it very much. And my question is, I'm looking at MasterCharge and or Visa MasterCharge, and that's MA, and I'm wondering if this would be a good time to buy it, and what's its value, and what's a good time to get in, and what's a good time to get out. Thank you very much.
Well, you get in when it's low, you get out when it's high. How's that? MasterCard Inc., MA is a symbol, provides global payment solutions and support of the credit and debit payments program of financial institutions, MasterCard. Its sales have gone up consistently, even during the last couple of years. It's not going up. It only went up 9% last quarter, which was the December quarter, and 14% the quarter before that. So it kind of probably topped off a little bit. And remember, I just told you that we are at the highs of our debt, matching the 2008 level, or very close to it anyways. This stock makes money, always makes money. It is going to make $4.26 in this year. That's 16% more than last year. Next year is supposed to make 16% more than this year. Because of its making money, consistency, all those things, the stock is pretty pricey. $112 a share, which means it's about a 30 PE. Okay. The good part is earnings and sales are growing, so it probably is justified to have a higher PE. It doesn't pay much of a dividend, only 0.8%. And the stock price has gone up pretty steadily since last July, when it bottomed at, what, $87, and now it's $112. I wouldn't buy it. I would wait for a pullback. I think it's a little bit pricey, and we're moving into a time of the year where usually the market gets choppy, gets volatile. I think you might get a better buy point. About $105 would be much more ideal for me in that area, $104, $105. The 200-day moving average is $102. I would love to see it down there. That'd be about a 10% correction from here. And that's what I would look for. And if it doesn't happen, I'd just move on, go look for something else. Because it's not compelling as far as a value. It's a good, solid company, very strong, 69% return on equity, which is huge. So, yeah, I like the company, but I don't want to overpay. 888-99-CHART. We're talking about Tesla for a minute. Talking about overpaying for something. Tesla is the classic overvalued stock that seems to keep going up, right? Keeps going up. So should you jump in? Now, one reason I brought up Tesla today is because it surpassed Ford Motor Company as far as market cap, size of company. Tesla is at $49 billion, and Ford is at $45 billion. So one thing you might want to look at when you look at these two companies is their sales volume. Ford sells $120 billion worth of cars and peripheral stuff, and makes $1.67 per share. Tesla, $8 billion in sales, $8 billion, and will lose $1.63 per share. So Ford's making $1.67, Tesla's losing. Now, Tesla will make money next year. They're scheduled to make $2.61 next year. But even at $2.61, it's a $303 stock. $303 divided by $2.61. So even if they make the numbers, you're still talking about a stock that has 116 PE ratio. Without making money, they have no PE ratio now. They don't make any money. Why is Tesla skyrocketing and Ford dumping? Because it's all about momentum. It's all about future cash flow, the future making money, not the past, the future. And everybody's thinking that Tesla is the future of huge cash generation. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that. I don't. But I think too many people are ignoring the debt levels that Tesla's taken on. Just because, and I do think Tesla, and I've said this before, I do think they'll be the next big car company. Well, they're already big if you count market cap. I'm talking about sales, too. I think they will. They're going to come out with their Model 3 pretty soon, sometime this year, I believe. And that's the one that's like the sedan, every man car, going to be $30,000, $40,000 or so. And that's their method to try to get into the mass market, because they're only, you know, right now it's only the high-end market for them. But I think that they're ignoring the debt that Tesla has, and they could easily file bankruptcy. GM filed bankruptcy because they carried too much debt in the financial crisis. Tesla is carrying a huge debt and took on more debt buying that solar panel company. So the huge, huge debt levels that Tesla is carrying, what could easily happen is they could file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, all the stockholders get wiped out, and they have new stockholders. And the company keep going forward. Meanwhile, you got wiped out. That I don't know if it's in its future, but the debt level really makes me nervous about that. So good, huge sales growth. So the question is something, what do you buy? Would you rather buy Ford or buy Tesla? Do you short Tesla or you buy Tesla? Short meaning you think it's going to go down. I would never short Tesla. Growth rate's too much. Sales growth is pretty, very strong. I wouldn't short that kind of stuff. But competition in that, and it's in the high-end electric motor vehicle, is going to come, and it's coming from, you know, like high-end cars. Audi, Volkswagen. This is InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
My question is, with credit being so hard to come by these days, it seems to me that companies that have a lot of cash will be able to buy up smaller companies and things like that, and they'll be well positioned for recovery. And I was wondering if you knew of a place online where I can do a search to find companies that have a lot of cash on hand. Thank you.
I think the premise is a little flawed when you said credit being hard to come by. I don't think it's that hard to come by. It is getting tighter with the Fed raising rates. Credit is getting tighter, but it's still pretty loose. But your point is valid as far as a company with lots of cash generally can afford to buy up companies that get in financial difficulties. And as interest rates rise, credit gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And so your point is valid. I'm just not sure if credit is tight right now. And the answer is no. I don't know where on the web that you can find a list of companies that have lots of cash. But if you go to finviz.com, it's a very extensive search engine that's free. If you're going to filter stocks, look for different positions, in there, I probably can guarantee you there is debt levels as one of the filters, and you would want zero debt on the companies you're looking for, and you're probably looking for mid-sized to big companies. So you could probably search and get a list pretty fairly easy, and the list might be a bit longer than you want it to be, but I believe you can find that through that search engine on FinViz, okay? FinViz.com, FinViz.com, okay? So that's where I would start. Where does debt go when you die? I had this question really asked to me. Someone was worried that their parents were in debt and that were the kids going to have to pay off that debt when they passed away? And the answer is no. Debt usually dies with you. You die, the debt dies. Now, what that does mean, though, what that does mean is that if you have assets, those assets got to pay off your debt before it goes to your heirs. You just don't get, the dead person has more assets than debt, that assets are going to pay the debt. And did you know 73% of consumers had debt when they died, according to Experian, which is, you know, the credit company that looks at your credit. 73% of the people, consumers, had debt when they died. And if not counting the home loan, which of course the home loan is guaranteed by the mortgage, so they get the house if you're upside down. But if you don't count the home loan, the average debt size when someone dies is $12,875. With the home, with the mortgage, it's $61,554. So most of the time, mostly debt goes away with the death of a loved one. So they can have tons and tons and tons of debt, and you as the children or grandchildren, you don't have to worry about it. It doesn't accrue to you. I had an email question. Hello, Steve. My name is, I guess I could use the first name, Habib. And he's in Washington. I don't care. He's thanking me. I appreciate that. I wanted to reach out to you in order to get a better sense of building a solid foundation with my portfolio. I would like for my foundation to consist of blue chip core holdings within all sectors of the market. My initial goal is with a premature strategy is to build a strong portfolio worth about $100,000. Could you provide some sort of a roadmap towards building such a portfolio on the podcast? Well, if you're going to do blue chip core holdings, of course, they all have to be big cap companies, $10 billion or more. Look for companies that have dividends. Look for companies that have always increased their dividends every year for many years. And those companies that have staying power, have a brand. Morningstar calls it a moat, M-O-O-T, which, you know, around a castle, moat of water, it's hard for other companies to compete with them. For example, Coca-Cola, because of the brand name. ExxonMobil, because of oil and their size. That's a moat. It's hard to compete with them. Our time is up for this hour. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve, and I will get back to you, I promise. On behalf of Justin Klein, everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.